Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Coming up in a few minutes, Richard Cordray, Director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, will join us. Right now, we have Joe Hallett, Senior Editor for the Columbus Dispatch, to talk about Richard Cordray. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Hi, Ann.
So, Richard Cordray, a mystery to most of the country, but to Ohio and to someone like you who covered him for years, not so much.
No, he is not a publicity seeker, not a flashy kind of guy, mild-mannered, quiet, just nose-to-the-grindstone kind of public servant who's been around for a while. He was elected Franklin County Treasurer. Before that, he ran for Ohio Attorney General and lost. And then he became the Ohio Treasurer in 2006, and a vacancy in the Attorney General's office occurred, and he was appointed and then won that job to fulfill the term. And then in 2008, he was defeated by Mike DeWine. So he has been in Ohio politics for a long time.
You mean 2010?
Yeah, that's okay, what I mean. Okay. It all runs together.
I hear you. So, but he's been around the block a few times.
Yeah, he has been around the block. He's a guy who is admired by Republicans and Democrats as just a good public servant. And from that point of view, I think he was an easy appointment for President Obama because he was not expected to draw a lot of hate or a lot of objection on partisan grounds.
And yet there weren't a lot of partisan objections because they just never were going to do a vote on it one way or the other.
Yeah, the Senate Republicans, including our own Ohio Senator Rob Portman, made clear that they do not object to Cordray. They said, we're happy to appoint him, but first we want changes made in the agency he's going to head, and that they wanted more control over the budget. They wanted it's the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. They wanted more control of the budget and oversight over the agency than was originally in the law, and the president and the Democrats have balked at that. So, by power of the filibuster, which seems to be the rule of government anymore, they are successfully delaying and have delayed the appointment of Cordray, causing the president to do what he did last week, and that was use a recess appointment.
We're getting Richard Cordray on the line right now, but before we go, Joe, so what's the politics in the state of Ohio? How does this play into the politics? The Democrats, are they glad, sad, neither over the much ado about this appointment?
No, I think they're happy, and I think President Obama is happy politically because this is a win-win for him. First of all, I think most Ohioans and Americans in general believe that there is a need for this Consumer Protection Bureau and that it needs to have teeth. And I think they're eager, given the banking collapse and the scandals of 2008, that we have an agency on board that oversees that. So I think the people are with the president on that. And secondly, Richard Cordray is not a person who's objectionable to anybody. And so to raise objections on a technicality over his appointment, I think also is a win for Obama.
Joe Hallett, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Happy to be with you, Ann.
Joe Hallett, senior politics editor, senior editor for the Columbus Dispatch. Right now, we want to welcome to the show Richard Cordray, director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Welcome to the show, Mr. Cordray.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Congratulations.
By the way, what's all this Mr. Cordray stuff? I thought I was Richard to you.
Well, all right, Rich. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What surprised you most about this process? Did you know that this was coming up very quickly and that this would happen this way?
I did not know. You know, I was nominated, as you know, to be the director in July of last year, so the process had taken some time. During every day of the process unfolding, that was another day that the Bureau was unable to deliver on the promise of leveling the playing field in financial marketplaces so that we could protect the public both with respect to banking sectors and also non-banking institutions. And so it was a big day for us to have a director in place so that we can now fulfill our mission and really work with both hands on behalf of consumers.
What were you doing up to this point? You were putting things together, setting up the agency, the enforcement arm of it?
We have been doing that, yes. I mean, we've been doing two things, Ann. Number one, we have been building an agency from the ground up, which is no small undertaking, and that work continues. We're not finished with it yet. As they say, Rome was not built in a day, and a consumer protection bureau is not built in a day either. But secondly, since July, which marked the one-year anniversary of the passage of the law, we had been starting to exercise some of our authorities, but not all of our authorities. So we were somewhat distorted in our work. We could go ahead and regulate and supervise and enforce the law against the 100 or so largest banks and financial institutions in the country, but we could not touch the non-banks, which includes, you know, many mortgage servicers, mortgage brokers, payday lenders, check cashers, others. Who have a lot to do with how consumers are treated in the financial marketplace.
How might, for instance, payday lenders be regulated at the federal level? As you know, in 2008, Ohio voters approved Issue 5 by 64%. They approved Ohio House Bill 545 that capped the Ohio payday loan industry's interest rate at 28%. What might change?
Well, this will be the first time that there has been federal oversight of payday lenders. That's a very new process, and it's a challenge, I think, for the industry to get used to that. You know, banks are used to being regulated. They've been typically regulated by other entities and will continue to be. The difference for us is that we will be looking at them very specifically with an eye to how do they affect consumers, that is, and how do they affect you and me and our families. With respect to payday lenders, we'll be doing the same thing. We'll be looking at their practices. We'll be looking at how they market their products. We'll be looking at the nature of the product and how it works. And we will be looking at potential for consumer harm, and we will make judgments about how to proceed based on that. So we will have the ability both to supervise those institutions, which means we can send examiners in on the ground to get all the documents we need, any information that we need. We can ask the tough questions, and we can correct problems at the source as we see them. We also can enforce the law against payday lenders. All of the Truth in Lending Acts and other statutes that we've inherited, as well as enforcing the law against unfair and deceptive practices. And ultimately, as appropriate and as justified by circumstances, on a careful review of the circumstances, we can write rules and regulations that govern the payday lending industry. So we have broad new authority. I think it is needed. I think it's timely. I think, in fact, it was long overdue.
So much of what happens at a consumer financial level is local. How do you enforce nationwide what's happening at the local level?
Well, that's a great question, and it's a question that raises a lot of concern for us. So as a federal agency, how do we maintain antenna to what's going on the ground in 50 different states, lots of different types of communities, lots of, you know, very diverse population of more than 300 million Americans? We have started to create and started to hear from people on the direct pipeline that we have at our website, which is consumerfinance.gov. We have a tell your story function in particular that's been of great interest to us, because consumers can come, tell us about their experiences, tell us about their concerns, their frustrations, what kind of problem they ran into, and this is going to help, already is helping to guide how we prioritize our work.
Who's running the enforcement arm of it? Is it Kent Marcus from Ohio?
That is correct. He has become the chief of enforcement now that I have become the director of the Bureau.
And to what extent are you going to have regional offices that people can go to?
Yeah, Yeah, as you can imagine, with a new agency that we're building, it's a work in progress as to what exactly our regional footprint will be. Thus far, we have established 4 regional offices, one in San Francisco, one in Chicago, one in New York, and one to cover the Southeast that actually operates out of Washington here. Whether that's the right model down the road, if you look at other federal agencies around the country, some of them have regional offices, some do not. Some of them have many more regional offices than we have currently. And others, it's just a variety of things. You have to make judgments about what you need and how you can best stay in touch with local conditions. We're interested in seeing how technology can help us do this. That's that we're doing a lot of aggressive work through our website. That's something that I always tried to do in my offices in Ohio when I was treasurer and attorney general. It can work for some. For some purposes, you also have to be mindful that there are various populations that still do not have consistent or ubiquitous internet access, such as especially elderly populations or some of the rural populations and many of the lower income populations. So we're mindful of that as well, but we're trying to work out our model as we go.
Any concerns about the pushback on your appointment and how it might affect your ability to do your job in the future?
You know, I really don't have any concerns about that, and because we have for so long needed a director in order to do our job properly. You know, the people of this country who have in overwhelming numbers favored having a consumer watchdog agency to help them navigate the financial marketplace, to stand on their side, protect them against fraud, see that they're treated fairly. This is important work we're doing. We are moving ahead. Having a director is, as I said, a big step for us because it allowed us to take one hand from behind our back and address these problems with both hands. We're going full speed ahead.
Well, Richard Cordray, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Glad to talk to you again.
You too. All Rich right. Cordray, Director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in Washington. Coming up, Pat Wynn Brown. Stay tuned. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, moving on up. It's the American dream, but American upward mobility is falling way behind Europe's and Canada's. What's up? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins later this afternoon at 1 o'clock on 89.7 NPR News. 38 degrees with partly sunny skies in downtown Columbus. Expect sunshine throughout the day, a high near 45 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low of 31. Sunny skies for Tuesday and a high of 48. Clear skies Tuesday night, a low of 35. And looking ahead to Wednesday, some rain likely, a high of 51. And you can help shorten the 89.7 NPR News winter membership drive. Become a sustaining member. For every 100 sustaining members we receive, we will eliminate one day from our drive. Visit WOSU.org and make your gift right now. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Humor in almost all its iterations, from silly to bittersweet, is Pat Wynn Brown's stock and trade. Mostly, she sees humor as the best medicine for whatever ails you. For that reason, one of our New Year's resolutions was to have Pat Wynn Brown visit us again as soon as possible in the new year. She's a performer, producer, director, author, philanthropist, MC. She's a 3-time winner of the James Thurber Summer Series Humor Award. She's been recognized by Business First newspaper as a finalist for Healthcare Hero and a finalist for the prestigious National Jefferson Award, an award created by Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. She also is a featured humorist in a PBS documentary about the life of Irma Bombeck, one of her heroes. Welcome back, Pat Wynn Brown.
It's so nice to be here on your classy show.
Question for our listeners. Can you remember a time when humor really helped you get out of a funk, get over an illness, or at least cope with an illness a bit more productively? Give us a call. Tell us your story. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Don't be shy.
No, join the conversation.
You know, you wanted to talk about humor memoirs.
Yes.
And
yes.
What do we mean by that?
Humor memoir. I've been calling myself a humor memoirist because it's very hard to describe my hair theater episodes to people. And that seems to explain it because I look at my life stories. I look at the eras that I grew up in, my wonder years, the 50s and 60s, which are the best eras for hair and music and popular culture. And though it's like Monet's water lilies. Those are the times that I think about all the time when I look in the mirror and I'm combing my hair and getting ready for the day and thinking about my hopes and dreams for the day. So I use humor memoir as my art form, and I use humor to get through my life, and I have since I was a little girl. So it's a gift to me, and it's a gift I like to share with audiences. And I get the reaction from them that they also appreciate this. They resonate with it. And my favorite comment at the end of a show, one of the hair theater shows, is, "I needed that laugh more than you'll ever know." And even though my stories are different than theirs, or my references are different, or my stars and icons of music are different, it resonates because humor is humanizing. And it's a way to cope with so many things in life. And we've been having the discussions about the government and Congress and stalemates. If it weren't for the humor of Colbert Report and Jon Stewart show, I just think we'd all be weeping every single day because this has been a very, very difficult time in our history. So humor can help us come together as well as a country.
614-292-8513. If you want to share an example of how humor helped you get through a tough time, a tough physical time, you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Pat Wynn Brown, founder of Hair Theater, performer, author, humorist, philanthropist, you name it, and Carolyn in North Carolina. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Pat. This is Carolyn McGrail Warner. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? We went to high school together, Bishop Reedy High School. Go Knights.
We did. Well, I recently had a milestone birthday, as you know, Pat.
We both turned 60. Don't be afraid to say it, because if you don't say it, the terrorists win.
We turned 60. Yay! And I was really taking it kind of hard just because my mother passed away at 74 unexpectedly of lung cancer. And it hit me, and my children decided to take a fun look at my life, and they actually posted it on YouTube, and I'll send you the link later.
Love to see it.
Oh, yeah, it's really funny. They went all the way from birth through boyfriends. They got my boyfriends wrong, but that's okay. They just went through my album and picked out pictures of guys from high school. So some of them might be really surprised they were my boyfriend if they watched the YouTube thing. But at any rate, and they put a brown wig even on my grandbabies that are like 9 months old and 3 years old. And they connected me. I've actually had spots from my son over in Okinawa, Japan, who's a lieutenant in the Marine Corps. They had my son from Missouri. So it was really fun. That's how they helped me kind of laugh my way through my 60th birthday, and it was great fun. And instead of feeling bad about it, I had fun.
Well, I'm glad, and humor is a great beautifier. And when we go into our 60s or 70s or 80s or 90s or 100s, if you have a smile on your face, you look beautiful. So I'm glad your family was able to make you smile.
And you do, too.
Thank
you.
I love you too, Carolyn.
All right. Well, thank you so much for letting me share. And this is fun. I'm having fun listening to you.
Happy birthday.
Thanks, Carolyn. Happy birthday.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you want to talk with the Pat Wynn Brown, now's your chance. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Share your story about how humor helped you get through a tough time. You won the Summer Thurber Writing Contest 3 years with your humor writing essays. It started with humor writing.
It started with
humor
writing.
Which is very difficult to do. I'm not a very funny writer myself.
You're very funny.
Well, thank you.
Very cute, too. Great hair, I should say. But humor writing, because I would always tell these stories to my friend Lori Giuliani. And I would tell stories about my family and growing up and my adventures. And I have wonderful adventures. I really do. And she would say, well, you should tell these stories to people. And I said, well, why? She said, oh, they're entertaining. They're instructive. They're inspirational. So I started writing down the stories of my life and started with the very old alternative paper, The View After Dark, and worked also for The Guardian and the other paper. Columbus Alive. Mm-hmm. But then people started resonating with these humor columns, and then I started to read them in public, and I entered the Thurber contest and then won three years in a row, which was fantastic, and became a board member there. So I love James Thurber, and in fact, they're having some wonderful humorists on Friday come to speak at the museum. And I love the whole sense of looking at the world kind of upside down. So it went from there, and then I started doing my shows. I did a Woman on the Edge show, and then I went into the Hair Theater shows. So this season, the show is Hair Theater Beauty School, and it's really my humor writing performed. It's chit-chat performance pieces. And I'm very excited about a new show I'm going to write called Roots from Hair Theater. But it'll be a little serious.
Double entendre there?
Yes. It'll be a little serious. And it's going to help me to communicate about a tragedy within my family in a humorous way. And the way I did that is to take a fabulous trip recently to Gwydir Castle in Wales and discover some of my roots there and to go on the trail of one of the icons that I adore and love. And all of that will come together into this new show, Roots. I'm still doing Hair Theater Beauty School, which I'll do May 6th here in Columbus. Mm-hmm. So everyone should come to that. But I'll be writing the new show, Roots.
It's not the first time that you've taken a serious topic or something that's been triggered by tragedy and turned it into not something funny, but used humor again to tell that story.
That's right, because with the Dude, Where's My Hair show, where the children were facing the life-threatening diseases and had lost their hair to chemo, the six children whom I adore told their stories, and they were able to make the audience laugh, and they made themselves laugh. And I think they gained power over their situation. It gave their parents such a different view of them rather than a sick child. And they became stars of their own life instead of victims of their own life. And sadly, as you know, we lost three of those children. So I'm so happy and grateful and blessed that they have this show. Their families have this show in their lives that they can remember those wonderful stories and wonderful times and how talented and funny those children were. If you can have humor talking about a childhood disease, then you know you've got your spirit. You know you've lost your spirit when you can't laugh anymore and nothing's funny. And you know you're feeling better when things start to be funny and you can frame it with humor and take a terrible situation and put humor all around it in the gift wrapping. And that makes it more meaningful and purposeful in your life, and then you can deal with it.
I was watching The King's Speech last night again, and a great movie, obviously. Colin Firth, you know, won the Academy Award for that. And he's with his teacher, his speech teacher, and you know, right up to the bitter end, right before the coronation, they're getting in this huge argument, and then he finally realizes the teacher is a great person and helping him, and he says, I don't know how to thank you. And he says, well, knighthood.
Yes, exactly.
It was like, right, you know, to joke around like that.
To joke around, and it'll get you through anything. It really will. It's a sacrament. It is the most wonderful medicine for life, and we all need it.
Now, I want to get back to the Brits with you in just a second, but first, Tirza, you're on the air from Hilliard. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Hi, Tirza.
What a great topic. I am calling. I was going through a really difficult divorce You know, I ended up driving pregnant with three children across the country to come back home to my mom here in Columbus, and quickly took a job after my son was born at a nursing home locally working on a locked unit with Alzheimer's and dementia patients. And we just had a ball and, you know, just started laughing. And I got to be an activity coordinator, which is a really fun job for just finding ways to give joy to these people. And it, you know, I started was feeling so sorry for myself until I started working there. And it was just, I'm still there. I love the place. I love the laughter I can find with people who are much more medically compromised and have so much going on in their lives. Very similar to what you were saying about the kids, you know. It was just a great opportunity to, you know, hang out and laugh with people.
I'm so happy that you called in with that, Tirza, because with the Hair Theater Beauty School show, the two main points in the show, even though it's a humorous thing, is we need to take care of ourselves. And the best way for us to feel better is to serve others. And I bet you saw that right away when it's the only way to heal is to help somebody else. And when you're able to do it with laughter, you know that you're going to be okay, because look at your situation, how desperate that was. It's the saddest thing to even envision you having to do this. And so now you're back on your feet, and probably you're paying forward also to help other people who may be in the same situation.
I feel that very strongly. It's great. I love this topic. This is wonderful.
Well, thank you, Tirza, and you just keep soldiering on.
Okay, thank you. I will.
Thanks, Tirza.
Okay, bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I know we have a Facebook message coming in. You can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. And you can tweet me at Ann Fisher WOSU if that is your preferred mode of communication. So we mentioned we've been teasing people with the British references.
Yes.
You went to your ancestral castle. We don't all have a castle.
I'm not so sure I do either. But what happened was this. I was Googling my maiden name because I knew I had Welsh connections. I know about the Irish connections, and I knew I had Welsh connections. And then this castle popped up, Gwydir Castle in North Wales. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Well, there was a book, Castles in the Air, about this young couple bought the castle in 1994. It's the ancestral home of the Wynne family, and they said the illustrious Wynne family. And that drew me in because you know, in these days, maybe we're going downhill a little bit. But I read this book, and I said, I have got to go there for my 60th birthday. This is what I've got to do. So I wrote to Judy Corbett, who wrote the book, who owns the castle with her husband, Peter Welford, who's an artist. I said, I'm coming. I'm coming to the castle. And it's a B&B. So I wanted to discover my roots. I have no idea if I'm related to those Wynnes, but they were the princes and kings of Wales. They were great supporters of the arts. Quite a wonderful family, and they're all over the place, these Wynnes in Wales. I just had to do it. So my friends in London, Lindsay and Anita, wanted us to come over. They wanted to go to the castle too, since it's a B&B, so anyone can go. And we had a marvelous adventure that included going there, but also going to Paul McCartney's house in London and standing outside of that house on trash day, and because I brought you a little something, and then doing the Beatle tour in Liverpool, because Paul McCartney plays very much into all of my shows because I'm his secret wife. So the new show Roots is going to deal with going to the castle, which is my Oz, Gwydir Castle, all that happened there, including the ghosts, and how that has helped me to refocus on a major family tragedy that I never write about, I never talk about to anyone other than my closest family and friends. But I am going to talk about it because it's time for it to come out, and I think it's going to help a lot of other people.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Patty, do you have something to...
I have something I want to give to you, and it's from Paul McCartney. I was outside his house. Some people call it stalking. Okay. In London. And he was in town because he had a concert. And so Anita helped me.
Oh, he was really there.
Yeah, he was there. And we're taking pictures and I'm pretending like I'm talking on the intercom out front. But it was trash day. So I took some leaves from his trash bags and I took them home and spray painted them silver and framed them. And they're over my desk. But I brought this from his trash bag for you. And I was thinking about you. And this is something ripped up, and it's instructions for him. And because I've read a lot of Nancy Drew books, I can kind of decode this. And it says something like, any close-fitting leggings, again, thermals are good, cycling jacket makes a good – it's some kind of instructions for him to go on a trip that I'm going to interpret as that he wants to go on with me. So I want you to have this scrap of paper, and then Anita helped me rip these from his hawthorn tree, I think. They're little leaves and berries. So this
hawthorn.
Is – These are for you.
Wow.
From Paul McCartney, and you can thank me later.
Wow.
I know. Trash day at Paul's house.
Wow, this goes up on the bulletin board, Patty.
Oh,
for sure.
I know.
For sure. Yeah. And, you're right. Sport of rowing is on the other side of it.
Yeah,
rowing.
He may be.
J.D. in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, J.D.
Yes. I got a similar situation. A woman called in earlier about going through a divorce. About 30 years ago, I was living out of town, and similar situation of this woman. I didn't have to drive cross country, but I was out of town. And I'm going to make up the dates. I wrote a letter, and I didn't send it, but I wrote a letter to the editor of Sports Illustrated magazine and said something like, December 18th, my wife left. January 13th, I lost my job. February 11th, Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue arrived in my mailbox. Not a moment too soon.
Did they print your letter?
No, I didn't. I didn't send it.
Oh.
I did, but it was. It saved me some money not sending it. Just going through, you understand the divorce situation. Anyway. Somehow she saw it before I – but anyway, I didn't send it, but it was cathartic enough just to put it down. It made me chuckle. It made you chuckle, and I just wanted to share it with you.
That's marvelous.
It's always good when you can entertain yourself.
It is good. We have to be able to self-calm just like babies. And I think when you write things down, even if it's not for publication, if you write a letter to yourself or to your six-year-old self or to the person that you're having difficulties with, writing is one of the most powerful tools we can use for sorting through our problems in our brains.
Right, right. And I think that was a letter that probably would have gotten published because I think the editors would have chuckled as you did, but it was just, if it had been email, I'd probably, boom, had it out there right away. But,
oh, right, that's right. Okay, I was going to say, yeah, okay.
But anyway, it amused me and just got me going in the right direction, and here we go.
Well, J.D., thanks.
Thank you,
J.D. I hope you're doing well now.
For Mark on Facebook writes, it is very therapeutic to go to a bookstore and find the Far Side cards. If they still have them. I used to stand in stores with tears rolling down my face because they were so funny. You know what I do is I go to the calendar, you know, daily calendar sheets where they have Farsight or some other facsimile, you know, some other kind of comic. And I do that. I go through each day of the year.
Right. And you can get your chuckles, and you need that. And I'll go to my humor writers. I love Chris Buckley, who's a pen pal of mine, actually, in real life. I don't make that up. And I love to read Irma Bombeck. I think she still holds up. And Thurber's My Life in Hard Times is so funny. You cannot help but laugh at this humor. So check those things out, too. And then the other day I wasn't feeling well. I watched a full day of Marx Brothers movies. It cured me.
My guest is Pat Wynn Brown, performer, author, humorist, founder of The Hair Theater. If you have a question or comment for 614-292-8513. We'd love to know how humor gets you through tough times. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll get back to another Facebook message. We've got folks on the line waiting to talk to Pat. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, the story of Rin Tin Tin, a dog found in the wreckage of a kennel during World War I, who would become one of film, radio, and television's biggest stars. We'll talk with author Susan Orlean about her new book, Rin Tin Tin, The Life and the Legend. It's her first original book since her bestseller, The Orchid Thief. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And join us for live special coverage of the New Hampshire primary. Tuesday night at 9, join NPR's Melissa Block and a panel of political reporters for candidate speeches, interviews, and expert analysis. It's special coverage of the New Hampshire primary from NPR News tomorrow night beginning at 9 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from OSU's John Glenn School of Public Affairs, offering continuing education and graduate degree programs designed for the working professional. More information at glenn.osu.edu.
And join us for All Sides tomorrow from 10 until noon when we discuss landlords who rent substandard housing. That's in the first hour. And then the second hour, Tech Tuesday, apps to get fit for New Year's resolutions and consumer electronics and more. That's All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow from 10 until noon. Sunny skies today, a high of 45 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low of 31. And All Sides continues on 89.7.
Welcome back. My guest, Pat Wynn Brown, performer, author, humorist. I could go on and on and on. Founder of Hair Theater, of course, which she's best known for, but also her writings and her performances of all kinds. Well, not all kinds, but...
No, I do draw the line.
From Lauren on Facebook, chat at WOSU.org/allsides. She writes, I work as an activities assistant in a nursing home, and it is definitely filled with humor daily. Ever since I was a kid, I have coped with anything difficult with humor. I won class clown in high school and am proud of it. Wow, Lauren,
no,
I am
that.
Jealous
That's
of that.
That's great. Class clown.
It's a good thing.
I wonder if she wears a little red rubber nose to work.
Like
Patch Adams.
Oh, yeah. I mean, wow. Class clown, I think that's way up. It's much better than prom queen. Frank, in Winchester, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Pat and Ann. I can't believe you said the red nose thing. Halloween just went by, and I went down and bought about 20 of them.
Aren't they great?
And I just keep them and hand them out.
Well, that's great, Frank. Are you a professional clown, or you're just on the street corner, or just when you're pumping gas at BP?
Going out, exactly. Just getting my exercise and blah, blah, blah. And I did not make class clown. What an oversight. My call is for my son, who allows me to be the greatest straight man that can be. And what you have to understand is when my son laughs, it's the belly laugh from the toes to the tears.
Oh, that's great.
And when I'm watching TV, the kitchen is behind me. So that's how he gets behind me, with a pair of clean jockey shorts that he might half slip over my head and then just split. God.
How old is your son?
My son is 41. He's a Down syndrome child.
Oh, and you guys have a great time together.
I can't even begin. I was just looking at the Christmas stuff, talking to my friend Rick about a camcorder that I've just got to get some of this on film.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you should.
Yes, too. Funny. There's into my master bedroom, I keep the door closed. And then the bath is in there, and he'll walk to the door and hit it with his knee like he hit it with his head and bounce back.
Oh, the old fake injury trick.
He sits in his chair, and all of a sudden he'll just slide out of the chair and just fall down and rock on his back.
See, like, he's talented.
He has made me the greatest straight man. And like Abbott Costello said, The straight men are the ones that make all the money. You comedians are a dime a dozen.
You're right, Frank. And look at George Burns and Gracie Allen and wonderful straight man George Burns was.
Do we miss that humor?
Miss it a lot. But we can, you know, because we can have that fancy internet that I think is really catching on. You go to those and you can find these videos and watch them. And if you're having a tough day, then look up some George Burns and Gracie Allen.
That's right.
If I have a tough day, my son will just put my arm around me, look me in the eye, and say, I love you too, Dad.
And that is the most wonderful. What's your son's name, Frank?
Brad.
Brad. Well, Brad, if you're listening too, or you can relay the message, I'm very proud of you for carrying on the humor tradition, and you are a pro, and keep making Daddy laugh.
Thank you, Frank,
for that call. What a great call. You know, family stories are always the best.
They are the best. I love the family stories. And it's important to go back to your family stories because there are books about examining what family stories go around the kitchen table because some of them are inspiring and help you to learn to carry on about your grandparents coming over from Ireland or your great-grandmother was a pioneer woman, and they have great lessons. But also, there are family stories that are filled with myth that can diminish you and kind of keep you from your proper glory. So take a look at what you believe to be the story, and it doesn't have to necessarily go the way you have that script in your mind, which is what I want to do with the New Roots show, is I want to reframe the script by this trip to Gwitter Castle and looking at the family tragedy and putting it all in a different perspective. And I can do that with humor. I know I can do that with humor.
If you have a question or comment for Pat Wimber, I want to share your own story of humor in the face of adversity, humor in the face of illness, humor in face of, you know, traumatic change in your life and how it helped you get through it. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We've had some great stories so far today.
Yes. Another important thing about humor is that it helps the truth go down a little bit easier. And George Bernard Shaw said, if you're going to tell somebody the truth, make them laugh or they'll kill you.
Right.
So you're able to say some pretty, you know, risky things if you're using humor to say it.
Now, you gave me a list of your favorite humor memoirists.
Mm-hmm.
You already mentioned Christopher Buckley.
Yes.
And Losing Mom and Pub, about his parents both dying the same year, is very poignant. You said, and I have not read that yet, and I want to because I've heard it's very, very well done.
It's well done, and it's hilarious. I know it doesn't sound like very funny subject matter, but we have written back and forth for about 10 years, ever since he was at Thurber House and I introduced him, and we just hit it off, and we've been pen pals ever since. And so all through his father's illness, he was writing about that, and then he wrote this book, and he sent me a copy of it. And I lost my mother this year in March, and she had a long illness like his father did, and he was there a lot. This book was so helpful to me. Losing Mom and Pup, and it's a small little book. I'm sure the library has it. Christopher Buckley, and he talks about both of them dying within the same year, what he went through with them, and he had a moment with his mother as she was dying, and I've never read anything like this before. At her bedside, he said to her, Mom, I forgive you everything. I've never heard that from a child, and it was such an honest thing for a son to say about his mother, who was the famous and beautiful socialite Pat Buckley, and his father, William F. Buckley, Jr. I can't recommend that book enough to anybody who's going through helping aging or dying parents.
And Phyllis Diller. You bring up, I loved Phyllis Diller.
There's a great documentary about her last stand-up concert, and do check it out through Netflix or whatever your system is. Phyllis Diller, to me, when I was little, when I would watch her on Ed Sullivan's show, first of all, she had the wigs, and she dressed as a clown, and she later said that women weren't allowed to be funny unless they were sort of clownish in some way. They weren't allowed to just be attractive and funny at the same time. So she dressed like that so she could say the truth about her life. And it reflected her life with her husband,
Fang.
And she was able to get away with a lot. And she has these drawers of stories in this documentary and jokes, and she memorizes her act, and it's an hour-long act, and they show her in this documentary getting ready, and 5 minutes before the show, she has to sit very quietly before she goes out. And they go through her little regiment of what happens with her. I think she is so interesting, and more needs to be written and said about her. I'd love to see the movie about her life, you know, have somebody play her. I would love to see that.
Well, I've named my nickname for B-Bomb. You know how it's like those feathery colors and those wild feathery colors? Well, they always remind me of that feathery hat she used to wear.
Right.
You know, the big white feather hat.
Well, and these
and
wigs.
So I call them the Phyllis Diller flowers.
Right. That's right. Because it looks like her hair and her cigarette holder and those boots and her knobby knees. And she's had a lot of face work. And I saw her at the Tavern on the Green waiting. And I was waiting for my husband and she was waiting for her companion. And I stood there and I looked at her, and we were the only two people there waiting at the desk. And I just said hello to her. And usually I have my picture taken with a star. I'm just so brazen about it. I just couldn't do it.
She's so big.
So I wrote her a letter the next week. And I said, I was there, Tavern on the Green. We spoke to each other. I didn't ask you to take a picture. I regret it. I will always regret it. And she sent a nice autographed photograph of herself that I have up on my wall, which I thought, that's very dear of her to do.
614-292-8513. That's the number to call. We're running out of time. If you want to share your story, we still have time. And there's no one else on the line. So if you're feeling industrious, do call in, because we love to hear them. And you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Or what might be quicker right now is to go to Facebook and do it there. You talked earlier about how your hair theater and your show, you know, your writing and everything is all memoir based. I'm just kind of curious about how you do it and how you make that into such a multimedia presentation, because there's lots of different elements that you bring to the show. And I was wondering how it started out with hair theater in the first place, how you got to that concept.
Well, hair, when I was growing up, hair was everything. It was, you spent a lot of time on your hair. And so you spend a lot of time thinking while you're doing your hair. And when you're at the hairdresser, you talk about all of your problems and your ups and downs, and you kind of solve them by the time you leave your hairdresser. So when I was watching my hairdresser one day, I thought, this is theater. This is theater. And all the things I want to talk about are the same things I talk about with my hairdresser, Olivia. So I would start to put together all the things that I would talk about with her, and just start with a creative process and a little web of what I want to do and what music comes into that and who the stars are. And right now with the new show about Gwitter Castle and Roots, I have this big pile of notes that I've made. I put them in a big pile. I've got a little picture of Paul McCartney. I've got a picture of me at Gwitter Castle. I made a poster for the show, and not one word has been written about it yet, but I kind of see it as a whole entity. And then I'm going to begin tomorrow to separate these piles of paper and to see where I can fit in the story of my family and the tragedy that happened, and how to bring all of that together, where Gwitter Castle will be my Oz, and then all these other adventures that happen along the way with Liverpool and London and our friends, those will all be me going down the yellow brick road to Gwitter Castle.
Jen in Dublin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jen.
Hi, thanks.
Hi, Jen.
Hi, Patty. How are you doing?
I think this is Jen from Thrive Theory.
This is. Yeah, I didn't realize you were going to be on today, so I was excited to see your post about that. So it was a great show, and I just had a story I thought would be appropriate to share just about humor during life's difficulties, because this is just one of the things I love so much about Patty, that she likes to keep it light even when it's difficult, and I've always been able to relate to that. When my mom passed away, I was 18, and I had my three older sisters. My favorite thing to do was to go to Mass when my sisters were in town because they were all in college and I was younger. And so when we would go to Mass for the holidays and things, we would just laugh so hard. It was always so inappropriate.
You're not supposed to do that.
And the worst thing was at my mother's funeral because the place was packed wall to wall with all these people that we – so many people that were in my mom's life and that we didn't even know. And, you know, we had a big family and we're all just picking up our couple of pews and, but we're surrounded with all these other people. And everything that came out of the priest's mouth just cracked us up so hard. And we just couldn't help it. One minute we're crying, the next minute we're just like doubled over in laughter. So it made the day bearable, and it was just, it was wonderful. It's one of the things I remember most about that whole time. So
that was your mother. That was your mother inspiring you girls. And it puts me in mind of one of the little dudes from the Dude Wears My Hair show. When Hannah died, she loved silly string, and she was 22 years old. And her father, during the service, with Hannah right there in the coffin, at one point, Randy Stahl got out a thing of silly string and sprayed the entire congregation with it. And I have never seen anything like that in my life. And we have some pretty good wakes being Irish people. But that was the greatest triumph, and she would have loved that. And your mother would love and probably did love that you girls were laughing.
Jen, thank you so much for your call.
Talk to you soon.
But before Jen, I think I have a couple of your Thrive Theory pins.
Yes.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay.
Good.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Bye.
Yep.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Because Anne is a beauty school grad.
Yes. Tracy in Reynoldsburg, we just have about a minute left, but I wanted to get you on. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, girls. Listen, you are awesome, both of you. I love you both.
We love you.
Thank you.
And I do comedy for my church and women's groups, but my mom was a funny lady and dressed up as a clown a lot. And my mom and dad both died within a year.
Mm.
And the humor I had to use to get through, you know, all the illnesses and sicknesses and laughing at the wrong time and telling people, hey, my mom just urinated in the car. Ha ha, you know, you tell the wrong thing to the wrong person at the wrong time.
Yeah.
But it helps you.
It does help you. And
right.
And to lose them both in the same, that's very difficult,
and
Tracy.
Just loving them through the illnesses. But I was going to tell you, when Phyllis Diller was just on a couple months ago on Rosie.
Oh.
She interviewed her.
Oh,
and
okay.
I didn't know she was still alive.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And so everything in my house stops.
Yes.
Leave me alone. Stop, stop, stop. I stand in front of the TV in the kitchen. And, you know, and I watched that, and it was so amazing because the wigs, and I'd forgotten.
Yeah.
But that influenced me also. You know, all I do is want to go in vintage stores and try hats on with my daughter, and we just laugh. She's a teenager, but she's still. But just thank you for your humor.
Thank you, Tracy. Thank you for calling.
Thanks
Tracy.
Okay.
I'm going to check that interview out on YouTube. It's probably out there somewhere. Pat Lynn Brown, thank you so much for joining
us
today.
You're welcome. Humor is something that we need in our lives, and it gives us hope.
And so, and on that score, we'll have Pat back as soon as possible.
I can't wait to come back. In fact, I may not leave.
Okay. Thanks for listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7, NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.